6 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Joining us on the phone, nutritional consultant from London, Pam Colleen. How are you, Pam?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I am excellent, but a little concerned.
Mm.
I have a concern about a report about bacon yesterday that said my boys won't be as good swimmers if I eat a ton of bacon on a daily basis. Good thing I don't eat bacon on a daily basis, but if I eat whitefish on a daily basis, I may be okay. If I eat bacon or other processed meats, may not be good for men's fertility. I know it was only one study.
I think people need to extrapolate from that article what is comfortable for them, because I don't want anybody to be afraid of eating meat in general. But I would like people to try and buy the best quality bacon, the best quality meat that they can buy, because we need meat in our diet. And, you know, there are a lot of questionable agricultural practices going on out there where they're feeding pigs and they're feeding cows, of course, food that is not designed for their intestinal tract. So they're eating things like corn and soy. So it's increasing the amount of omega-6 that you would find in their meat. And omega-6 fats, you don't want to overaccumulate them in your body because they are pro-inflammatory. And, of course, cancer is an inflammatory condition. So we want to try to find the best quality bacon, try to find the best quality meat as we can find.
Could it also be
practical for people, Tom?
Yeah, and could it also be, though, and that we know with processed meats, there's other things within the meats, like nitrates or nitrites, that could it be, we don't know that it could be not the delicious part of the bacon, but it could be what we use to preserve the bacon. We don't know what it is.
There is some research to show that, and so that's why with your cold cuts and so on, you do have to be careful. You know, you want to try and find the ones that are the most natural and so on. So you have to be somewhat discerning when you are picking any kind of these processed meats. In an ideal world, you want to, say, for example, buy a roast and slice it up and make your sandwich out of that meat directly from the carcass, if you will.
Right.
Same thing with turkey, same thing with chicken. When you're buying the processed versions, you're getting an inferior quality piece of meat.
Now, the good news out of this, and it's just one study out of Harvard School of Public Health, and it talks about, and really the stress is on a processed meat, what they replace it with is not barley or any sort of fermented grain product. They're like, yeah, but if you eat fish, it really helps. I'm like, really? But I guess in a lot of cultures, though, eating fish for breakfast is not that unusual, is it?
No,
and we're talking
not.
About ocean fish like cod or halibut. That's not so unusual for a lot of cultures.
It's great to eat fish. But for a lot of people within their budgets, of course, sometimes fish can be out of reach financially. It depends on the fish you're talking about here. But certainly if people can and do want to have fish in their diet, it's a great idea. The smaller the fish, though, the better in terms of the accumulation of mercury. So if people are over-consuming fish, and especially the larger fishes, then you're going to stand the risk of over-accumulating mercury in your body, which you do not want. You know, that's not going to be good for your fertility either. Some people just eat fish once a week, twice a week at the most, because they're worried about the mercury, and they should be worried about the mercury. I test people who eat a lot of fish, and unfortunately, I do see a lot of mercury in these people, and that is not a good thing. So once or twice a week to eat fish, I think, is reasonable. If you want to eat the smaller fishes, like the herring or the sardine, that's a better choice because you're going to get all the benefits of the fat-soluble vitamins and the omega-3s and so on, and you're not going to get the overaccumulation of mercury because these fish are too small to have had a lot of time in the water to accumulate the mercury. So certainly the smaller fish would be a better standard.
I got a question from a texter. I don't want to throw this out of the blue at you, but if you're not comfortable with it, no problem. But Glenn asks, hey, Tom, can you please ask Pam about hypothyroidism? My wife's doctor isn't listening to her, so we want to see if there's something we can do at home.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, that's a huge, huge issue. And it's something I'd say that most of my clients come to me thinking that they have a problem with their thyroid gland when it's actually a problem with their adrenals. It's not a problem with the thyroid typically at all. It's a problem with the adrenal glands. And so you have to target the adrenals. You have to get the adrenals stronger. And that's what I do on my program. It's a very difficult thing to do to resuscitate adrenal function. People have to learn how to baby those adrenal glands. So my clients are not allowed to do heavy exercise because when you're pushing those adrenal glands with heavy exercise, with cardio, for example, then you're pushing on those adrenal glands, which slows down the thyroid, right? So the thyroid gland and the adrenal gland work like a gas and a brake pedal. So when you're overstressing those adrenal glands, then the thyroid is going to go low, right? And then you have to look at heavy metals, the accumulation of metals in the body. Most of my clients are holding on to too much copper, too much manganese, too much mercury. These metals are going to interfere with your body's thyroid hormones. You also have to get gut function working properly, because when your gut has something called auto-brewery syndrome, when we're not breaking down our food properly in the gut and we do not have a good balance of gut flora, healthy gut flora in our guts, then you're going to create all sorts of chemicals like acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is going to interfere with your thyroid as well. So you see, this is a really, really loaded answer for a rather complicated issue. And it's so pervasive today, but all these poor people are out there taking thyroid medication.
Yes.
And they really aren't, they're not going to fix the problem by taking thyroid medication, unfortunately.
There is so many people that are have wonky thyroids that I'm like, when did this happen in terms of thyroid, either hypo or hyperthyroidism? I mean, we had a dog that had a hyperthyroid problem, and I was like, all right, well, what can you do about that? I'm like, yeah. But now I see so many people have either hypo or hyper.
Yeah, they're usually hypo. Sometimes they're hyper. But it's such an epidemic today, and it's really tragic, because what happens is people go on these thyroid medications, and then they feel better for maybe 2 or 3 months. And then essentially they reach a plateau and they stop working. And unfortunately, some people actually stay on the thyroid medication for years and years and years and never really feel well. They don't feel great on those drugs. And one of the reasons is because they haven't addressed the problem, the root cause of the problem, which is really coming from the adrenal glands. And very few people, I'd say anywhere in Canada, understand the adrenal glands. I had to learn about adrenal function simply because I was on death's door for many, many years. I thought I had a thyroid problem too. I went on thyroid medication for a couple of months and I'm like, what is this stuff? It's not doing a damn thing. And then I had to do the research on my own. I had to take my health into my own hands. And that's why I've delved so deeply into the adrenal function, because it's really so core to so many illnesses that are out there today.
Wow. All right. So I'm glad I asked that question about hypothyroidism. So what can he do? So going back to it, what can they do at home? Glenn wants to know, all right, her doctor isn't listening to her. Is there anything they can change?
She has to slow down. She has to slow down. Work at a snail's pace. She has to get those adrenal glands.
That's something a lot of people
relaxation.
Don't want to hear. I know. A lot of people are like, slow down. Are you kidding? Life's going a million miles
this
an hour.
Fast new world, right, Tom? I talk about it in my last book, this fast new world. It's synthetic. We're not designed for this fast new world. We have to slow down. And my clients, my female clients who have been diagnosed or think they have a thyroid problem, one or the other, a lot of people think they have a thyroid problem and don't get properly diagnosed, or then they may get diagnosed. But most of my clients have some sort of thyroid issue. And these are women in many cases who are taking on the world. You know, they might work full time and have a family at the same time. And it takes me so long sometimes to get these women to slow down. You've got to imagine that your adrenal glands are in a cast, that they're broken, like a broken leg or a broken arm. And you've got to let them rest in order so that they heal and put out the correct amount of chemicals in the body. Not all that adrenaline, you know, all of that, all these chemicals that are produced because of stressing the adrenal glands. We're not supposed to be doing that to our poor adrenal glands.
How long do I rest? What's good? A long weekend? What can I do in a week? I'll be back to normal?
Well, a lot of my clients can't even get out of bed. So they're complete couch potatoes, which makes me very happy. But that's how sick they are in many cases. If people can carry a part-time job or a full-time job and they're feeling lousy, then what they have to do beyond work is they have to just rest. They can't take on all sorts of volunteer work. They can't agree to doing all these potlucks or family functions. They have to learn to say no. So evenings and weekends, you've really got to just do what I call chillax. You've got to relax. You've got to put your feet up, read a book, watch hopefully more uplifting TV shows, nothing really terribly scary or thrilling. You know, you want to just keep those adrenal glands at bay. You don't want to shock them too much.
Interesting.
And you've got really just got to set boundaries, Tom. People have to learn to say no more often.
Quarter after 11, Pam Colleen joining us on the program. When we come back, a quick couple of text questions, but I really want to get into calorie counts coming to menus in Ontario. So are we doing the right thing by posting calorie counts on our menus and menu boards? 11:16 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 20 minutes after 11 o'clock, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant from London, joining us. Pam, I got a text question. I'm not quite sure what it means. Maybe you can decipher it. It's short, though. Mm-hmm. Is celery extract worse than nitrates?
Well, it's the same thing. I didn't want to bring that up earlier because it's a complicated question. But, you know, they can use the nitrate from things like celery to preserve sausage or meats or whatever, you know. So nitrates are naturally occurring. So when we were talking about nitrates or just preservatives or additives in general, I think that it's hard to know what in the bacon could be causing the problem is the bottom line. So, you know, this is a conundrum that the natural meat industry has in terms of making organic bacon, for example. Mm-hmm. Right? They will still be using nitrates as part of the preservation process, but they're going to be naturally occurring, but they can't say that they're nitrate-free because they will have nitrates in them, but they're going to be coming from things like celery juice or cucumber juice or whatever, right? So I think that there's other things in the meat that are...
So don't focus on the preservatives necessarily. There's probably other things that may be doing this.
That's right. That's why I wanted to bring up the feeding of the animal, rather, because I think a lot of the problem is coming from the food that the animal is being fed in the first place, right? So I think it's really important to just really focus on making sure that the animal is outside on pasture, and that's what you want to do in terms of finding the gold standard.
Last week, Ontario said they'd be the first province to make menu labeling mandatory after consultations with the food industry. Deb Matthews said we'll introduce it this winter. What do you like? What do you dislike about menu calorie counts on menus and menu boards?
Well, there's two problems with that effort. Number one, it's a waste of money. Number two, it's going to make us even sicker here in Ontario. So it's going to create even more of a burden on our healthcare system for people to turn to the calorie theory. We have been going and looking towards this calorie theory now for decades, and we're still just as fat now as ever before as a society. So it's not working. It's antiquated research. It was a theory. It's been proven wrong. And there's more and more evidence out there to show that the calorie theory, you know, calories in, calories out, sloth and gluttony, you know, these things are just not accurate. Tom, I don't know if you remember talking about that BBC series, The Men Who Made Us Thin.
Yes.
And I don't know if you got around to watching the four videos on YouTube.
I watched one. I watched the first one.
Okay, and in there, I'm not sure if that's the one where they talk about the calorie theory, but it becomes clear when you watch that series from BBC that the myths in and around obesity are all false. We had our eye off the target, and we know that the calorie theory doesn't work. And unfortunately, if the government pays all this money to make us more informed about calories, it's going to be a complete waste. And number two, people are still going to believe that calories count when they don't. There's a big difference between good calories and bad calories. And the most nutrient-dense foods that we should be eating on a regular basis, those are very calorie-dense. And so if we believe the calorie theory, we could start avoiding these wonderfully nutrient-dense foods. And that would be a real shame. That would make us actually much, much sicker. So I really hope the government doesn't go ahead and do this. It's just a disaster.
So what would you do? I mean, is there an alternative, or what would we break our calories down? Is it so, people now, I mean, when they look at the macronutrients and they look at, this is my carb count, my protein count, my fat count. This is, should we break it down further? Although that would, people, you know, would claim that's too complex. Like, well, how would you do it to inform? Because I believe, maybe not calories being the answer, but forewarned is forearmed, that if I am given the information and I make a decision based on that information, I can't blame anyone but myself. So what information should I be receiving then?
Well, if they were doing it federally, the Canadian government should actually turn the food pyramid, if you will, turn it upside down, and then we'd have a better chance at getting healthy as a province and as a nation. And if they started with just fixing the food guide, I think we might have a chance, because since the government has been so wrong for so many decades in terms of promoting this high carbohydrate, low fat diet, they've really just got to eat crow, admit they were wrong, and fix the food guide, and then we might have a chance, right? Because since they've been publishing this food guide, of course, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind. So people are unfortunately listening to the food guide, and that's a real shame. But if they could actually just to save face, admit that they were wrong, and fix it, then more and more people would make better choices all around.
So what do you tell people in terms of, obviously you're not an eat whatever you want person, but what should I be keeping mindful of? If I go in there, what would be the numbers to look at?
Well, the number one thing we've got to focus on is getting enough calories from animal fat, right? 70% of our calories should be coming from animal fat. So we've got to enjoy fatty meats, and we've got to enjoy things like eggs and butter and high-fat cheese like our ancestors enjoyed. These are our ancestral foods. When we ate these foods and lots of them, we were much, much healthier back then than we are today. And unfortunately, there's been campaigns out there demonizing these foods, telling us not to eat them, when indeed there's just so much evidence to show throughout history that these foods are extremely healthy. Unfortunately, because of interests like the edible oil industry, the soybean industry, they've been paying for research to basically banish the enemy, so to speak, right? They want us to stop buying these foods, so we turn to their foods. And they've done a very good job at buying their own science to demonize their competition. And we've been turning to their foods for decades now, these synthetic newfangled foods. We've been turning to these foods for a long, long time. And obviously, it's not working for us. So we have to go back to eating old-fashioned foods, because we know when we ate these foods, we were much healthier.
So Burger King coming out with the Satis fries, were there 30% less calories? Is that a good step or a not good step? Because this is confusing me.
Mythology, right? I mean, if you cook your potato, or if you're cooking French fries at home and you're frying them in butter, lard, or tallow, right? If you're frying them in animal fats, you're probably doing yourself a better favor by doing that. But these restaurants are cooking these fries in things like canola oil or soybean oil. And unfortunately, these are the oils we were talking about the last show, Tom, when we were talking about reduced sperm counts and things like that. These are the oils that are implicated in really compromising the male sperm count. So if the restaurants would actually fry those fries in animal fats, that would probably be a respectable choice. But to keep our eye focused on this idea that calories, reducing calories and somehow making these French fries are, you know, somehow they're healthier that way, I think it's actually totally unethical. Then you have this notion that, you know, when you're frying a food like potatoes and you're putting them in extreme heat, when you have a sugar and an amino acid together in a food and you expose them to high heat, you form a chemical called acrylamide. And acrylamide is potentially cancer-causing. It's a neurotoxin. It reduces sperm count in men as well. So this is something that's just formed naturally in the potato, in the French fry, in your potato chip, for example, in these crispy, crispy foods. They're very, very high in this substance called acrylamide, which is very, very toxic. And in California, there have been efforts to try and actually they have warning labels, I think, still. I think places like McDonald's had to put warning labels saying that that food had a high acrylamide content because it went to the courts. People were so afraid and so disturbed by how high the acrylamide content is in things like potato chips and French fries. There's even been scientific groups in Europe set up to study the phenomenon of acrylamide.
Wow. First I started with bacon, now my French fries. Come on, give me some good news, Pam. Don't tell me cauliflower. Don't tell me cauliflower.
You know, people can enjoy some of these fun foods. It's just you don't want to overdo it because of things like acrylamide. But they're fun to have at restaurants or at parties. I'm not trying to just wipe it off your plate entirely, but we have to be judicious because when something is so highly processed, there's going to be a dark side to it.
Pam, always a pleasure. Have a great week. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good, Tom. Thanks for everything. Take care.
You too. 29 minutes after 11 o'clock. News is next on 610 CKTV.